Before I introduce Rabbi Yalkut, I do have to give some thank yous. First of all, to Rabbi Jerry Eisenberg and to Jossi Eisenberg for helping set everything up, making sure all the arrangements were done. Ketuv tam. Secondly, also, I want to thank my in-laws and my mother for joining us this morning. I want to thank the Av Beis Din, Rabbi Reis, for honoring us with his presence as well, and for so many of you who've been here all morning, in, out, but learning Torah with us in memory of Yaakov. I also want to take a special note to welcome Mrs. Schlesinger, who's with us. I knew there was one way I could get her to join us, and that was to make sure that we brought Rabbi Yalkut here. And so it is a pleasure and an honor to have Mrs. Schlesinger with us and to have a little bit of chelik in the nachas she's going to get in a few moments. I have known Rabbi Yalkut for many years. In many ways, he's an honorary Chicagoan because his whole family is from Chicago. His late father, Zal, studied in the yeshiva. His mother grew up here in Chicago. And Rabbi Yalkut also grew up in Chicago through Camp Mosheva and through all of the many friendships. As I mentioned at the beginning of this morning, when I spoke with my children about who we should invite this year to speak, the suggestion came, why don't you invite Rabbi Yalkut? He was friends with Yaakov, he knew Yaakov, he's become a very accomplished Rav, first in Richmond and now in Pittsburgh at Pohelei Tzedek. He continues to have the connection with our community, and as normally is the case, my kids were right. Rabbi Yalkut has truly revived a shul in Pittsburgh. He is known throughout the country for his creative ways of touching people both intellectually and also touching their hearts. And it is a great pleasure to be able to welcome him here, that he flew in special for today, and that he's able to join us in remembering Yaakov by learning Torah together. His topic is Where the Beginning Meets the End, a new look at the Aser Simei Tshuva. Without any further ado, Rabbi Daniel Yalkut.
It is a very, very familiar looking and warm crowd this morning. As I look around, I feel like I'm on some kind of episode of This Is Your Life, looking out at the many people who have come out this morning. I want to acknowledge the presence of a number of people this morning, the distinguished Rabbanim. Unfortunately, my flight came too late to be able to hear Rabbi Schwartz this morning. Rabbi Schwartz is nothing less than a gift to the rabbinate of North America, and we look forward, God willing, to many, many years of his wisdom and his leadership. The Av Beis Din, Rabbi Reish Shlita, is here. The Marta Asra here. This building is an honorary and original part of Or Torah. The Marta Asra, Rabbi Engel, who is a very, very old and beloved friend of mine. I have more to say about this a little bit later on this morning. And of course, Rabbi Matenki, who, as he mentioned, has been a mentor and friend going back probably 30 years at this point, starting the Sifriya in Wild Rose, and in a variety of different ways in my life. I value very, very much his friendship. I'm also really humbled that so many of my family members from here in Chicago were able to come out today, especially my grandmother, who was already mentioned, Mrs. Margot Schlesinger. My grandmother is now entering, with God's help, her 98th season of the Yom Narayim, of the Days of Awe. A lot of Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippurs under varied circumstances throughout her life. And we hope, as all of us this year pray for another year in good health, to be able to see her children, her grandchildren, her great-grandchildren, who Kanai Nahara continue. We continue to add to the list of great-grandchildren, and we hope that, God willing, we will have many, many other Yom Tovim to be able to celebrate together. I also, and then again, to note all of the various cousins who have come out, would probably take a lot of time that I have, but suffice it to say, both on my mother's side and the side of my father's Zecher Levracha, that there are people who came out, and I very much appreciate taking a time on a busy weekend, a week before Yontif, to come and to learn together. Finally, it is very special for me to share this morning together with members of the Matanky family. I think of Yaakov very often in a variety of different settings. It happens to me where Matanky called me and asked me to come and to learn Torah together, Le'ilui Nishmas Yaakov, a number of weeks ago when my family had the rare privilege for us to spend 3 weeks in Israel. So I was actually staying in Alon Shvut the week that Rabbi Matanky called. I had learned in Alon Shvut Yeshivat Haratzion probably 23, 24 years ago. And Yaakov also learned in the Gush. It was 7 years later, which at the time felt like a lifetime, but now seems a lot shorter in the passage of time. So I was very, very, very excited about once I finally got my my internet situation ironed out to actually respond. I was very, very excited about the possibility to come and to learn with you here this morning. And I was thinking about it during the time that I spent in Alon Shvut as I was walking the halls of the yeshiva together with my children, including my youngest son, Yaakov Dov, whose bris was on Yaakov's yard site, and for that reason we decided to name him Yaakov in Yaakov's memory. And it was really a very, very wistful feeling, really thinking about how I am going ahead with my life, and that now, you know, here where I was 24 years ago coming to yeshiva, and as Yaakov Avinu said, "V'ata ha'isi l'shtei machanos," now, you know, where I came to Israel with my stick in my hand, metaphorically speaking, and now I'm here together with all my children. And I was thinking about how this continues to be something painful for the people who loved Yaakov. So I was reminded of a promise made by the prophet Yeshaya a very long time ago. And it's a promise in the Haftorah that today we read on fast days, but the truth is, the ancient minhag was that this was one of two Haftorahs that you were supposed to read during the season of Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. One of them is what we refer to today as Shabbos Shuvah, and the other one is the Haftorah that is now read on fast days, the Haftorah of Dirshu, which in fact the Shulchan Aruch actually specifically says that the reading of Dirshu on Tzom Gedalia is not merely another fast day, but is actually a fulfillment of this old practice to read Dirshu during this season of the year. So the Navi says, talking to those servants of God who never had continuity in this world through children, the Navi says, "V'nasati lahem b'veisi v'chol ma'asi yad v'Hashem," that God promises that He will put in His house and in His walls a permanent memorial, tov mibanim mibanos, as hard as this is for us to fathom, better than sons and daughters, shame olam etein lo, asher lo yikares, that I will give those individuals an eternal name. The Metzudas David says that the reference to the walls and the house means that inside the Beis HaMikdash, inside the wall where the Sanhedrin used to meet and study Torah and promulgate Torah, ki mitzion teitzesora, that those people would have a share in that Torah, that somehow their names would not be forgotten in the promulgating of Torah. And I felt very much that that was what we are trying to achieve this morning, to give that undying continuity to Yaakov through all of these people who have come together to study Torah in his memory. And I really hope that what we share together over the next short time that we have should be a source of merit. Le'ilui Nishmas Yaakov Levi ben Rav Aryeh, and that God willing that he should continue to live in this world as he undoubtedly does in the next, by all those who love him and remember him and continue to bring goodness and holiness into the world in his memory. What I want to share with you this morning is essentially not original. This is not something, there are certain perhaps little bits and pieces that I added on my own. But I want to share with you a Torah that comes out of one of the most exciting Batei Medrash for the study of Tanakh in the world today, Machon Yaakov Herzog in Alon Shvut. If I recall correctly, Yaakov was himself a great devotee of the Chugim and Shiurim given to the Machon. I think he was even going for teacher certification at the Machon. So while I was in Israel, I purchased a new sefer that came out within the last year. It's a sefer called Zachor V'Shamor by Rabbi Yoel Ben Nun, who is again probably one of the most unique, really a Mayan HaMisgaber, a spring that continues to flow of creativity and originality in the study of Torah. And Rabbi Yoel in this book presented to me a answer to a dilemma that has been on my mind for a very long time, that has changed the way that I look at Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, and I hope will add that same sense of freshness to you as well. So I would like to preface this by sharing with you a professional secret shared by myself, my beloved friend Rabbi Engel. Is there anybody in the room here who is a Scrabble player? Anybody play Scrabble here? Okay. So Rabbi Engel and I have been friends again for about a quarter of a century now. And we were chavrusas, and once we, for a couple of years, once we physically parted ways, we continued to be in very close contact by phone and electronic media. And particularly given that we both are serving in the Rabbanus in different places, that we often discuss and collaborate and try to bounce ideas off of each other, and that in the course of the learning that we do over the course of the year, whether it be our private learning, the shiurim that we are privileged to be able to give, right, that very often we'll come across an idea that we'll try, you know, they say that that Shammai, whenever he found something really a delicious piece of food, he would say, he would put it away for Shabbos, right? That's how you fulfill the mitzvah of remembering Shabbos. So by contradistinction, rabbis, when they find a delectable piece of Torah, they file it away to find the right place to use it. So we have many discussions of this. So we'll come back to Scrabble. So those of you who play Scrabble are familiar with the two most coveted letters, ostensibly, on the Scrabble board are Z and Q. Right? Now, the reason why these are coveted letters, they have a lot of points associated with them. They have a lot of points associated with them because they are often almost impossible to use. So those of you who are familiar with playing Scrabble know that you sometimes have the following problem. You get a Q early on in the game. So you think this is going to be your salvation. Right, you are going to play the most amazing game of Scrabble, that everything is going to turn on that Q. And if you can just find the place where you get the Q on the triple letter, and you can extend the word to a triple word, and you play all your letters, right, you will get 75,000 points, right, and you will be the world champion of Scrabble playing. Promise doesn't really work like that. And in fact, the Q is often the demise of the Scrabble game, because you sit there and you hold on to it and you keep putting down words like and the and things like that while you're waiting for your big break to happen. So many years ago, I don't know which one of us came up with this, but we pointed out that occasionally you come up with an idea, right? Some kind of a thing. You find, you know, there's an intriguing ritva somewhere, right? You find a new idea, a pasuk, a navi somewhere that you think is going to be, right, this is what is going to bring everyone in the world back in tshuva. If you can somehow deploy that idea at the strategic moment, right, and you sit there and you build castles around the idea. Every so often, part of our mutual responsibility is to point out to each other that the idea that we're playing with is a Q. Right? And this is going to destroy your entire Yom Narayim if you try to move everything around this, put it back on the shelf, and maybe some other time you'll come back to it. So I had a Q for a number of years, and let me tell you about my Q. Comes to Aseret Yemei Teshuvah, right? 10 days of repentance. Rabbi Brand already started to talk about the dynamic between Rosh Hashanah and Aseret Yemei Teshuvah. So I have had this dilemma for a number of years. What are we supposed to be doing in Aseret Yemei Teshuvah? Or to put it more specifically, is Aseret Yemei Teshuvah, right, the beginning of the year? What I'm trying to do in Aseret Yemei Teshuvah, right, is to prepare myself for a new year. I'm opening up a new book. I'm turning a new leaf. I want everything to be done this year. All of my failings, my interpersonal failings, my religious failings, I want them to be a thing of the past. I want to start from scratch. So we actually find that, to give you one example of this perspective, and there are others, if you take a look, those of you who have the sources in front of you want to take a look, we have today the Droshos HaNetziv, right, the Netziv of Naftali Tzvi Yehuda Berlin, a great Rosh Yeshiva of the Volozhin Yeshiva, the mother of yeshivas in Lithuania, again one of also among his many other claims to fame, one of the great towering early figures of religious Zionism. So the Netziv gave a drasha where he talked about what you should do as Aseret Yemei Teshuvah. And he says, he talks about the fact that one of the practices we have, Aseres Yemei Teshuva, is to take on stringencies. It's a very strange thing. Things that we aren't stringent on for the rest of the year. And there's a lot of discussion about this topic. Anyone, by the way, who wants to delve more into it, there's a wonderful sefer that was published a number of years ago by Rabbi Eliezer Brook called Bin Kessel Asor. Wonderful, wonderful sefer where if anything you ever wanted to know about Aseres Yemei Teshuva, except for the answer to my Q, right, are in this book somewhere. So he talks there, he quotes this Netziv, and he brings other examples. The Netziv says, you know, you would think that taking on a stringency for a week, right, is not really a very spiritually uplifting kind of thing to do. In other words, it sounds, to cast it in the blackest light, right? In other words, it really sounds like you're trying to play games with God. You know, it's the guy who comes for sentencing in court, right? And he suddenly, you know, shows up and now he's found religion and he's got, you know, a big nanach yarmulke and he wants the mercy of the court in this case. So then it says that that's not what's going on. He says, why do we have stringencies at the beginning of the year? He says, Shas Hachona Shani. He says that an hour of preparation is different. In other words, that this is a preparatory period. And then it happens to be once we're setting up the year in the right way, right, then perhaps we will merit divine mercy. Right? But this understanding of Aseres Yemei Teshuva says, if you open the calendar, Aseres Yemei Teshuva, the first 10 days of the year. Right, we know the beginnings are significant, and perhaps that is one way of understanding Aseres Yemei Teshuva. On the other hand, the Mishnah Berurah quotes an idea from the Yaros Dvash, from the drashas of Rabbi Yonasan Eibeshitz, the famous and controversial sage of the 18th century. That Rabbi Yonasan Eibeshitz has a beautiful idea. It really comes from the Arizal beforehand, who suggests that each of the Aseres Yemei Teshuva. Right, because again, once you cut out Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, which are both there and not there, you're left with 7 days. Right, so why do we have 7 days in between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur? Says Rabbi Yonasan Eibeshitz, he says, because each day of Aseres Yemei Teshuva is the day you do tshuva for everything you did wrong, right, on that day throughout the past year. Right, as you look, and you're supposed to actually do an accounting, what are my Tuesdays like, and anybody who has a varied weekly schedule, who are the people that I interact with on that day that I don't treat correctly, right, what is the, is that the day that I, you know, don't bother showing up in shul, because I have too much on my plate? In other words, you analyze the day of the week, and you do tshuva for that day. Now, you would think days called the strength of this position is you would think days called Aseres Yemei Teshuva, days of tshuva, right? Tshuva is repentance, it's return, right? It's going back and correcting the past. And it's very intuitive that Aseres Yemei Teshuva should be focused backwards, right? And there's back on the calendar. Problem is like this. If that was really the case, then when should Aseres Yemei Teshuva be? Right now, right? This should be Aseres Yemei Teshuva, the last week of Elul, right? There's, these should be the days where we're repenting, where we're looking back, right? We're now the very last, the curtain is falling on 5-7, 6-5, 7-5, right? The year is coming to an end, so we should be doing tshuva for the year. This is Aseres Yemei Teshuva, and then we come into Rosh Hashanah, and the truth is, this is a larger question as well, right? In other words, the whole relationship of Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, if you think of it, is a very strange idea, right? Rosh Hashanah is the day that we meet the king, and we start the year afresh, and we do all of the things, right? All of the various kinds of symbolic actions to be able to influence and to bless the year that's coming, or at least put us in the frame of mind to think about the year that's coming, right? And then we backtrack to Yom Kippur, right? It really, in certain ways, the way that we think of Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, first I should have Yom Kippur, right? And I pray and I beat my chest and I come closer to God and I atone for all my sins. And now, once I'm all nice and squeaky clean, then I start the year. But that doesn't seem to be the way that it's going. So around and around we go. Is Aseres Yemei Teshuva the beginning of the new year? It's a preparation, it's setting the tone for the new year. Or is Aseres Yemei Teshuva, right, the end of last year? So for many years, this is my cue. Every year comes along, I keep all kinds of, you know, files of the ideas that I'm thinking about over the course of the year. And you can actually, someday they'll go back to my Google Docs, right, and they'll find 5770, 5771, 5772, 5773. Every year, carried over from year to year, I had this question, and I never got anywhere. I never was able to find something that really spoke to me on this topic. So then this year I buy this new book, Zachor V'Shamor by Rabbi Yoel Binyon. And I have a totally new perspective that I'd like to share with you that I hope will be helpful to you in understanding this. So we'll start with the Me'iri. The Me'iri lives in Provence in the 13th century. The Me'iri writes, he has a whole comprehensive commentary on the Mishnah and the Talmud, much of which was not available for many, many centuries. It was found, a whole fascinating story, in the Vatican Library. Among other things, the Me'iri writes a whole book about Tshuva, the Chibur HaTshuva. So the Me'iri in the Chibur HaTshuva quotes a very strange Medrash, the kind of Medrash that makes us a little bit uncomfortable. So the Medrash says, starts with our old friend from the Yom Narayim, HaSatan. Right? The Satan, Satan, this dark force who we see kind of at the fringes of Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. Some of the liturgy talks about this idea, not to pay attention to the prosecuting angel, to the aggressor, right? We don't know exactly what this is, right? But there's a force that we find in our literature called the Satan. So the Me'iri quotes a gematria, right? Gematria is that the Satan in Gematria is 364. He says, so we know that the number of days in a year is 365. So why is HaSatan one day less than the Gematria of a year? To show there's one day where the Satan has no power. And that day is Yom Kippur. Right? All the rest of the year, the Satan is there starting up with the world, starting up with the Jewish people. He says, but Yom Kippur, the Satan has no power. So again, I am not a gematrist. I don't really know how these things work. But the idea is a very, very strange idea. And before we get any further, right, the strangest part of this is that a Jewish year is not actually 365 days. Right? A Jewish year is 354 days. Right, so suddenly we're using right, and there, suddenly we're pulling out the secular calendar in order to make the gematria work, which again, you know, some people would find doubly offensive, right? Both the secular calendar and the gematria. Although again, there are certainly great lovers and practitioners of gematria among us as well. So the question is, so what's going on here? So the Me'iri points out something fascinating in terms of clarifying this medrash. Says the Me'iri. He says, yes, the year, the Jewish year, and we'll talk about what the Jewish year is in a moment, the lunar year is 354 days. 354 days plus change. He says that the solar year is 365 days. He says the gap between those two different ways of calculating year, right, is roughly 10 days, right? Why 10 versus 11, we'll hopefully get to at the end. But for the moment, he says it's 10 days. So the Me'iri says something fascinating. He says, Mitzad she'echod b'tishrei, kfar nishlamu bo yimos shnas halvana, v'shnas hachama yisera alav asara yom. He says, Rosh Hashanah is the end of the lunar year. We'll talk about what a lunar year is exactly in a moment. Rosh Hashanah is the end of the lunar year. Right? In fact, we say right before the beginning of Rosh Hashanah, we say, Tichle Shana Kiloseha, may the year and its curses end. Right? Rosh Hashanah is the end of the year. But it's also not the end of the year. Because there are another, in other words, if we were counting a solar year from last Rosh Hashanah, the year still has another 10 days left that are unaccounted for. He says, so the reason why Yom Kippur, according to the Me'iri, okay, this business about HaSatan and Yom Kippur, the reason why we suddenly are using the solar year is because Yom Kippur is the last day of the last solar year. And there's that last 10-day period, right, which is both, paradoxically, the beginning of the new year that started in Rosh Hashanah, but it's also the end of the solar year that started last Rosh Hashanah. Aseres Yimei Tshuva is both the first days of the year and the last days of the year simultaneously. So let's quickly review how the calendar works. So the Rambam in Hilchos Kiddush HaChodesh gives perhaps one of the clearest explications of how the system works. So quickly go through the Rambam, and I'll share with you as well the insights that Rav Yoel Binyon has in terms of understanding how the system works. So the Rambam begins, Chod She'ashana im Chod She'alvana. the months of the of what we call the months of the year, those are lunar months. Now, the month, right, is really describes the cycle of the moon. Right? There's our observation of, based on how the moon goes around the earth, right, that it takes 29 days and change for the moon to be able to complete that cycle. Okay? A month is only a significant measure of time, honestly speaking, in a lunar system, if you're counting with the moon. Right? A month is totally irrelevant to the sun. The sun doesn't do anything on a monthly cycle. That's why a month in Hebrew is called either Chodesh, right? Chodesh means renewal, and it's connected to the renewal of the phases of the moon, or it's called, the other name that we have in the Torah for a month is a Yerach, right? Yerach is Yareach, right? It's a cycle of the moon, right? And the same thing is true, that's why in English it's the word for that period is called a month, or as we pronounce it today, a month. Right? In other words, it's a moon unit of time. It is, again, particularly in a world before there were, you know, electric city lights. No offense to any people who work with electricity in the room. But before there were electric lights, and you're able to really take a look and see the moon was like a very, very powerful element of the nighttime experience. It was very obvious to people. Every night you looked out, the moon looked different. You were able to date passage of time within short periods based on the moon. It was a very convenient period of time. So the Rambam says that we know from the Torah says, Olas Chodesh B'chodesho, right, the Rosh Chodesh, we bring the sacrifice in the renewal of the moon, and it says, HaChodesh HaZeh, this renewal of the moon is Rosh Chodeshim, right, that's the famous first mitzvah that Moshe and Aaron are given while the Jews are still in Egypt, right, and the whole famous Medrash that Hashem actually had like astronomy class, he takes Moshe Rabbeinu out, he shows him what the moon looks like, that is how it's supposed to work. Now, then he adds, Hashonim Sha'anim Mechashvim, Heim Shnei Hachama. He says, however, the years that we count are solar years. Shne'emar, and we have a mitzvah, Shamor Eschodesh Ha'aviv. So in the book of Devarim, we read it a few weeks ago, the Torah says you have to guard the springtime month. So the way the Chazal understand that is that we have to make sure that the month of Pesach, and by extension as well, the month of Sukkot, always takes place during the astronomic time of springtime. In other words, that it has to be in the season of what we call the vernal equinox. In other words, the day when the time between night and dark are totally equivalent, and then the days start to take more time than the nighttime. That's really the astronomical beginning of spring, and we have a mitzvah, even though the moon has nothing to do with that, right, that we have to keep things in line. That's what we call the mitzvah of Ibur HaShanah, that you have to intercalate the year by every couple of years, adding a leap month into the cycle of the year. Now again, you can theoretically set up a lunar calendar without doing this, right? This is, for instance, the way that the Arab calendar works. We'll speak in a moment why that might be the case. But again, this is something which anyone who is... Anybody here involved in any war planning? Anybody doing any war planning? So if you ever hear, basically, this is a very important piece of information for war planning, because the Muslim calendar moves around the year, right? So the month of Ramadan, which is the sacred month of prayer and repentance and fasting for Muslims, moves around the year. In other words, every year it moves back another 11 days, right? So it gravitates around the calendar. So this is important because it means Ramadan can sometimes be, and Ramadan is like, Wahavdil is like the kind of fast days that we do from dawn to dusk, right? So Ramadan could be in January, which I imagine is very exciting for Muslims, or it can be in July, which is less exciting for Muslims. Those of you who aren't war planners, if you want to be able to do this, I think I've always thought it would be a great industry to promote tourism to Australia for Muslims when Ramadan is Chal in July. Right, and just because that way, then you can advertise. You know, you have the program. It's like a Pesach program, but for a whole month. Right, in other words, you have, I don't know, the daytime in Australia in July is, I don't know, like 25 minutes or something, and then you have, you know, the tea room running from the time that they daven Maariv until the morning, and you could really make a lot of money on this. There's a lot of very wealthy Muslim tourism from the Gulf states. So again, anybody, you know, it's a new year, people need parnasa, so this could be a new project. You may want to use a different last name though. My work a little bit better for you. So war, I mentioned war planning because, of course, that any time there's going to be an armed conflict with a Muslim country, it's always Ramadan. This I've seen since the first Gulf War in 1991. Somehow, whenever you're planning it, you can't make the war during Ramadan. That would be, for some reason, you can't do that. They become crazy fighters during Ramadan. You don't want to do Ramadan. So you have to be sensitive to the fact that Ramadan is always moving around the calendar. So our calendar does not allow that. But because of the mitzvah Shamoras Chodesh Aviv, we have to keep it locked down right to the spring month. And then the Rambam says, very close, he says, Kami Yisir Shnas Acham Al Shnas Alvona, Karov Me'achadasar Yom. He says that it's about 11 days difference. He says, so therefore, when you, Kishe Yiskabetz Min Tosefes Hazos, Kmo Shloshim Yom, Apalchas Ma'at, or Yesem Ma'at, Mosifin Chodesh Echad. He says, so therefore, when over the course of a couple of years, you gather up a couple of these 11-day cycles, sometimes a little more, sometimes a little bit less, then you have a month left over, and then, as we will later this year, right, we add Adar Sheni, and that way we've made up and we've turned the clock back, right, being able to keep the lunar month back where it belongs. So the lunar month, well, let's start with the solar month. The solar year, which is really essentially the kind of calendar that the Western world uses today, right, that a solar year is very useful for agricultural purposes. In other words, if you're a farmer, as most humans were for most of our history, right, you need to know when you're going to plant, when you're going to sow, when you're going to harvest. Right now, it's interesting, the Muslim calendar, which rises in a, it starts actually in, it's an old Arab calendar. So Arabia is not one of like the big farming places in the world, right? That there's a reason why, you know, you very, you know, when you're looking in the supermarket and the tangerines that come from Mexico, right, that very few of them come from Saudi Arabia. It's not really a climate for extensive agriculture. So if you have a society which is based on essentially raising animals and being nomads and merchants and trade, right, it's not so critical that the seasons have to be so specific, right? However, if you're a farmer, it's very, very important to know the seasons. So the year, right, which is, and the truth is, right, the lunar year really is a construct. The lunar year is the fact that 12 lunar months are pretty close to a solar year. But the truth is, there's nothing super important, right, about, from an astronomical perspective, of the 12 lunar months. And there's the fact that a lunar year itself is something of a construct also, the same way that a month in a solar system is. The Torah obligates us to do both. And the truth is, Rav Yoel ben Nun posits, although I looked into this a little bit further, I'm not completely convinced, but he posits that the Egyptians lived using a solar calendar, right? A completely solar calendar without any lunar addition. And that when HaKadosh Baruch Hu comes to Moshe Rabbeinu in Egypt and says, HaChodesh HaZeh Lachem Rosh Chodeshim, that this new moon is going to be the head of the months for you, he says, we are just like you are completely breaking from Egyptian society, but I am giving you a brand new calendar. And this calendar, and again, the sun is really about the natural cycle and the seasons coming in their time, right? It's what people sometimes refer to as Shem Elokim, the way that God works in hidden natural kinds of ways, right? As opposed to the moon, which is constantly changing, right? It's very, very dynamic. You're always watching the moon. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu, when he came to Yetzias Mitzrayim, God is now intervening in history. And he says, you're going to mark this event by the calendar. And the Ramban talks about the idea of why the calendar is such a critical reminder of Yetzias Mitzrayim. Right? At the same time, right, the Jews coming to Eretz Yisrael, right, the solar cycle is very important also. Right? There's God gave us the mitzvah of working Eretz Yisrael, the famous Chasam Sofer, who talks about the idea that even though perhaps there is a debate about Torah versus working in Eretz Yisrael, everybody agrees about the great mitzvah of working the land of Israel. So you need a solar system also. So the Torah weds the two together. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to live by a lunar calendar, which is also affected by a solar calendar. Now, Rosh Hashanah is fundamentally a lunar kind of event, right? Brad mentioned before, the pasuk says, Tiku b'chodesh shofar b'kesel liyom chayenu, which it's not the easiest pasuk to translate, but to blow the shofar on Rosh Chodesh, right? That is the identity of Rosh Hashanah. U'b'kesel, on the day that the moon is concealed, where all you see is a sliver of the moon, liyom chayenu, for our festival day. Right? That's what the pasuk says. Rosh Hashanah's identity is Rosh Chodesh. It's interesting to note, and there are halachic dimensions to this as well. As I'm sure many of you are aware, if one forgets on a regular Rosh Chodesh, if you forget Yalav Yavo at night, right? What's the din? You don't have to go back, right? And the reason for that is there really was generally not Rosh Chodesh at night. Rosh Chodesh was declared the next day after people saw the moon. So the Chayyad, there was a whole fascinating discussion. Maybe you could say the same thing at Rosh Hashanah. Right, maybe since Rosh Hashanah fundamentally is a Rosh Chodesh, if you make a mistake in davening Rosh Hashanah night, you don't say HaMelech HaKadosh. Right, maybe you don't have to go back at all, because it's like a Rosh Chodesh kind of thing. It was always virtual. Right, it's very much hardwired into Rosh Hashanah. Rosh Hashanah's identity is the beginning of the year from a Rosh Chodesh perspective, from a lunar perspective. Yom Kippur is different. And I'll give you a number of the various ways that Rav Yoel builds this case. First of all, there's a great, as you know, by the way, Rosh Hashanah is never called Rosh Hashanah in the Torah. Right? In the Torah never tells you anything in the Torah and Navi about the idea that the first day of Tishrei is called the beginning of the year, because it's really the beginning of the first month of what is going to become the new year. But it's not fundamentally tied into year as a solar definition, right? Which is fundamentally what a year is about. Yom Kippur, right, is very much identified with the year. And there are two psukim, it's on the second page of the second side of the handout, right? Both in Sefer Shmos and Sefer Yikra, both places where the Torah describes the annual, and I use the word annual very specifically, the annual service in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. It says three times, Achas B'Shana, Achas B'Shana, Achas B'Shana, that it's supposed to happen once a year. The Yom Kippur is a once yearly event. And the year, and there's once we start hearing year, now we're starting to think solar. So Rav Yoel ben Nun's suggestion, this really is based both on the he didn't base it. He later found this idea both in the Meiri and in the Gra, right? Is that Yom Kippur's significance is that it represents the closing day of the solar year, the year that began the Rosh Hashanah beforehand. Right, that's the significance of Yom Kippur, and therefore, if we understand Yom Kippur along those lines, right, then that helps us understand really what we started with—the whole strange nature of Aseres Yemei Teshuva. Because Aseres Yemei Teshuva is about the first 10 days of this year and the last 10 days of the year beforehand. A number of interesting things that tip us off to this. So, first of all, Yom Kippur is the Yom Tov of the Beis Hamikdash par excellence. Right, the truth is, in other words, that certainly from a Torah perspective, the primary stage of Yom Kippur is the Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur. Right, that's the Avodah, which is the central thing we do in the middle of the day, where we follow the Yom Kippur, the Kohen Gadol, step by step for the Beis in the Beis Hamikdash as he represents the entire Jewish people before God. Right, there's actually the Baal HaMor actually says that this is so critical that he held that you have to say the Avodah in every Shmona Esrei of Yom Kippur. That there's no such a thing as a davening in Yom Kippur. Right? Man, there goes the break, right? There's no such thing as davening Yom Kippur without bringing the Avodah into it, right? Yom Kippur is a Beis HaMikdash Yantif like no other Yantif that exists. So the Beis HaMikdash, right, Rav Yoel ben Nun posits that the Beis HaMikdash is fundamentally a very solar year oriented kind of thing, because one of the primary things that we do in the Beis HaMikdash is the Beis HaMikdash is intimately tied in to the agricultural cycle of Eretz Yisrael. We have very special mitzvahs that apply primarily only in the Beis HaMikdash, the deal with the cycle of the harvest. You have the Korban HaOmer marking the barley harvest. You have the Shnei Lechem, the Korban HaShavuos, which deals with the wheat harvest. You have the Bikurim that go on throughout the summer. We have, according to Chazal, we have the Korban HaEitzim, we have the bringing of the wood for the altar, which is very tied in to the heat of the summer, and when the wood is dry enough to be able to be brought in, then we come Sukkos, we have the Nisach HaMayim, we're pouring water on the altar, which is tied up with the rain that you need for the coming year. But the Beis HaMikdash is very intimately, it's the heart of Eretz Yisrael, it's very intimately tied into that. And he says the Beis HaMikdash, therefore, is very tied into the sun. Three examples. Four examples. Example number one. It's a Mishnah in Krisus, right? It's actually in the Siddur in certain places. The Mishnah in Krisus says that when they made the Ketores, the incense for the Beis HaMikdash, they would make it in 368 parts, right? 365 for the year, and then an extra three measures of Ketores that were designated for Yom Kippur, right? Now, Why are we suddenly getting solar years? Well, in the Beis HaMikdash, and particularly connected to the Ketores of Yom Kippur, the solar year is more significant, right? It's about the seasons. Example number two. Normally in Judaism, right, we have a principle called Yom Holich Achar Halayla. Right, the way that a day begins in Judaism, right, is the day begins in the evening beforehand, right, at sunset or when darkness comes, however exactly you calculate it, right, that is the beginning of a day in Judaism, right. The one exception to this is in the Beis HaMikdash. In the Beis HaMikdash, we say it's a Gemara in Tzmura, the Kodshim Laila Holich Achar Hayom. The karbanos are only brought during the day, and that we measure the lifespan of a karban starting in the day and the night afterwards. Right, that's the way that it works in the Beis HaMikdash. Right, so why does it work? Because again, fundamentally, in a lunar system, you got to start at night, right? Because your day starts, right? And you calculate the calendar around when the moon appears. You can only see that at night. It's got to be that way in a lunar system that's consistent. However, right? If we're talking in terms of the solar year, and again, particularly when it's connected to agriculture, right, if you're a farmer, you work from sunup to sundown. Right? The sun is the beginning, and in many ways, experientially, we still feel this way. Right? Our day begins when the alarm goes off in the morning, right? And that's how our days fundamentally begin. And this is very true in the Beis HaMikdash. It was the carbon tamid could not be offered in the morning until the sun rose. And the Mishnah, both in Yuman and Tamid, describes how every morning they would have Kohanim like looking out to see what was doing with the sun. Has the sun risen yet? And they would have a whole ceremony. They would have the special chant. They would call Barkai, right? That the sun had, that the horizon has lit up. And it was only at that point that they could start bringing sacrifices. And the truth is even more fundamental. Fascinating Yerushalmi in Erevin, that says that the Nevi'im Rishonim, the early Nevi'im, which in this context is a reference probably to David and Shlomo, when the plans for the Beis HaMikdash were built, the Beis HaMikdash was oriented so that the eastern gate of the Beis HaMikdash was set up so that at the time of the various solstices, right, there's however the sun was oriented, whether the winter solstice or the summer solstice, the sun would shine directly through the eastern gate of the Beis HaMikdash. Now again, the Beis HaMikdash was oriented on an east-west axis. The building of the Beis HaMikdash was the far west of the complex, right? In fact, the principle in the Beis HaMikdash is Shechina v'Ma'arav, which is very counterintuitive to us. The Beis HaMikdash, as you go through the grounds, right, gets progressively holier as you move to the west, right? So all of us who grew up on the western side of Eretz Yisrael, we think of east as a holy direction. The truth is, it's Dafka West, because you want it away from the sun, right? During the time of the first temple, there's a big problem where there was a tremendous attraction to the worship of the sun. So the Beis HaMikdash was oriented in such a way that the sun would rise and experientially, the sun would bow through the western gate towards the Beis HaMikdash, through the eastern gate, right? Towards the Beis HaMikdash, right? That was the aesthetic effect that was created to bring home this message of the idea that the Beis HaMikdash was connected to the solar cycle, but that God was the controller of the sun and the cycle that it represented. So to me, this was like an amazing thing. This is a really, really kind of an amazing thing, and helped me really sort out this business about Aseres HaMishkan. There is a... What might be perhaps a first in this room, there is a fascinating and perhaps somewhat bitter comment ascribed to the Satmar Rav. So he said, we have a pasuk in the Torah. The Torah says that Eretz Yisrael is a special place because Eini Hashem Elokecha Mereishis HaShana Ad Achris Shana. That God's eyes are on Eretz Yisrael from the beginning of the year to the end of the year. So again, the theology of that is perhaps a topic for another time. Right, but there's something very interesting about that pasuk. Reishis Hashana, right, includes the definite article from the beginning of the year. Achris Shana, the end of the year, right, has no article. It's really, it says God watched Eretz Yisrael from the beginning of the year till the end of year. So The Sama Rav said, you know why that's the case? Because every year starts, and you say, this is going to be the year. This is the year, right, where I'm going to achieve everything that I haven't achieved yet. This is the year, right, where my relationships with my family are going to be better. This is the year where I'm going to learn more, where I'm going to go to Minyan, where I'm going to volunteer, I'm going to do Chesed. This is the year that I'm going to make Aliyah. Right, this is the year where I'm going to make all of my dreams come true. Right, this is the year I'm going to become a better person. Right, and the truth is, you come on, you're all shiny, you come in Rosh Hashanah night to shul. Right, it's very exciting. Right, you're starting a new year. But he says every year limps out as Akris Shana. It's just another year. Right? A year where you have failed and frustrated dreams and aspirations. But I think that this understanding of Aseres Yemei Teshuva as both the beginning and the end of the year perhaps is the recipe for rescuing the year. That it reminds us that it's not all over when it comes to Rosh Hashanah, that we still have another few days of a year. Again, due to this complex double calendar that our Torah uses, we still have another few days of a year where we can both repair our past, but also we can build our future. So Hashem Baruch Hu should bless each and every one of us as we come to both the beginning of the new lunar year and after that, the end of the solar year, that Hashem Baruch Hu gives us the wisdom and the insight to be able to tackle both ends of this, to make both our ends and our beginnings sweet in the way that we are davening for. Ksiv v'ksima tova to everyone, and again, thank you for coming out this morning. I thank everyone for joining us, and on the topic of joining, Rabbi Eisenberg would want to make sure that everyone also joins the Mizrahi. So there are forms that are available. Ktiva v'chatima tova.